Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, July 27th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are made available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Michael and Jeannie Rice at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And you can also use that tool effectively, as I have, to turn any negative emotional state you have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given, that internal guidance system. You can also download the actual worksheet process absolutely free. It's a simple PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And you'll get access to a completely free and private app that you can use because it contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either been stepped through the worksheet process or asked clarifying points about the dynamics that make it so powerful, or given powerful testimonials about how the actual use of these tools has led to positive change in their life. And we hope you do that soon and often, because that often leads people to have questions or comments. If you do that, you can call 563-999-3581 and press 1, and we'll have a conversation, discuss your questions. Alternatively, you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. whyagain.org, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And if we get your questions, we will do our best to address those questions in the show, and then you can listen to the archive and get access to our response. We're also doing the Course in Miracles lesson. This workbook lessons this year. Today is the 208th day of the year. I did not read yesterday's lesson, so I'll back up and read that. I am not a body, I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. And lesson 187, the review is, I bless the world because I bless myself. The Creator's blessing shines upon me from within my heart, where the Creator abides. I need but turn to the Creator and every sorrow melts away as I accept its boundless love for me. Today's lesson reads, I am not a body, I am free, for I am as God created me. And review of lesson 188 is, the peace of God is shining in me now. I will be still and let the earth be still along with me. And in that stillness, we will find the peace of the Creator. It is within my heart, which witnesses the creation itself. I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as the Creator created me. And in our Course in Miracles experiment book by Pam Grout, her lesson 207 reads, the anatomy of an illness, a.k.a. the ego's secret weapon. She has a quote here that says, a sick thought can devour the body's flesh more than fever or consumption. That's Guy de Maupassant. Pam writes, in 2017, the American Psychiatric Association updated its manual for diagnosing mental illness. Not surprisingly, this fifth edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM for short, listed a number of new, quote, diseases, close quote. The first DSM, which came out in 1952, listed 26 general disorders. Today, there are more than 400. Are we really 16 times crazier today? Or are we simply reacting to expectations, peer pressure, and the suggestion of mental illness? Stephen Pressfield, author of one of my favorite books, The Art of War, said that his boss at a Madison Avenue ad agency instructed him to invent a disease because, quote, then we can sell the hell out of its cure, close quote. According to lesson 207, our physical bodies are potent tools used by the ego for obscuring truth, for hiding our body's inherent natural healing power. Here's how it works. You notice something is off. You begin focusing on it. You wonder what it might be, as opposed to knowing that you are a child of the Most High and cannot inherit illness. You give it a name, and finally, you Google it, tell your friends about it, and join a support group. Jill Bolte Taylor, a Harvard-trained neuroanatomist who studies the brain and became famous for her TED Talk titled My Stroke of Insight, says that an unresisted thought passes through the brain in 90 seconds. That is, unless you decide to apply the five steps above. Lesson 208 from the Course in Miracles experiment is titled, Free Yourself with Thermodynamics. She quotes Andy Weir as saying, all my brilliant plans foiled by thermodynamics. Damn you, entropy. So, Pam writes, yada, yada, yada. Unless you're a physicist, thermodynamics is probably not a topic of conversation daily for you. But it comes in handy when trying to hang on to a particular identity. For example, my main identity for the past 25 years was mom to Tasman, my daughter. It's how I saw myself. It's how I made every decision. But like water that turns into vapor when atoms begin or gain enough energy to break through the molecular bonds of a liquid, it wasn't permanent. The love was permanent. The connection I have with my daughter Taz is permanent, but the identity was temporary. As much as I want to cling to structure and one particular identity, It can only cause me pain. All identities are temporary. All structures will eventually deteriorate. The universe is infinitely expanding. Trying to contain it or stop it is pointless. It will only cause distress. There's great empowerment in seeing my identity for what it is, short-term and mortal. The only thing that's real, the only thing that lasts, is love. It's the core, the bedrock, and the power. It will forever transcend all temporal identities. Love you forever, Taz. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson in the workbook today, and our readings from yesterday and today, both from the Course in Miracles workbook and the Course in Miracles experiment. So we have 48 minutes left. How can we support you? What's on your mind? What would be a useful topic for us to explore? Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you were here yesterday, you listened to an interview that I did with Dr. Pat Ogden, who created sensory motor psychotherapy and that institute. And we can talk about that, or we can talk about anything else that we've talked about in the past 10-plus years on the Mind Shifters radio show. How can we support you? What's on your mind today? If you were here yesterday and you listened to that interview, what are your thoughts about that? Is that a new topic for you? Did you know there is a sensory motor psychotherapy institute? Did you know that there's a whole wave of people getting far more out of therapy than they used to 20, 30, or 40 years ago because the whole body approach is being accepted by more and more people? And people are becoming integrative in their approach, or functional medicine trained in their approach, or holistically trained in their approach. And we have tools available absolutely free at yagain.org that rival anything I've learned in my studies as a psychologist and my doctorate in clinical psychology and my 47 years of experience in doing therapy in various settings. So if you're stuck with a negative thought about yourself or somebody else or a negative emotional state, we have some tools that we would be glad to give you access to absolutely free and many, many hours. I think Dr. Rice has been quoted as saying there's over 3,000 hours of Mind Shifters Radio that are now available through the archives. And you can access them absolutely free without our guidance or interference. And you can also access our guidance from whatever it is. 11 to 1 Central, 5 days a week. And the power of these tools and the understanding, the observation that drives them, and we continue to work, and Dr. Michael Rice is still getting downloads and having little insights and sometimes big insights about how the system works as well as it does and what the process of removal or forgiveness is intended to help us do internally. And as I mentioned in the intro, for over 17 years now, I've been using this specific tool to great effect. One of the issues that I run into a lot of times with people, whether it's on the Mind Shifters radio or in the support groups, is they grab a tool that they really like the EFT tapping or the breath work or the simple goal canceling, and then they don't do the worksheet process or they don't find a way to use it shall we say, in a thorough manner so that they can really get the cumulative long-term benefit. And so by way of example, I'll mention what happened for me over this weekend. This weekend was just a regular, blessedly busy weekend, and things were going along quite nicely. And I looked at my phone once, and there was an email from my business partner. And my response to the email from my business partner, which was a little negative, fairly neutral mostly, but a little negative, my response was an almost violent negative response. And I knew instantly, okay, there's something about the way I'm interpreting this that's triggering some really negative emotions, beliefs, or traumas in me. I'm going to need to do some work around this. Now, the bottom line is I know enough when I get a response like that, and I've been using these tools long enough to know the last thing I want to do is respond right away. So I recognized that I was triggered. I waited until the people I was with were occupied with other things, and I made my way to my office to do enough tapping and breathing and decide how to respond to this email without dumping the negative emotional state that I was experiencing into the response. And so, you know, the email was pointing out a faux pas, a minor misstep. It wasn't anything that cost anybody any money. It wasn't anything that embarrassed anybody or opened somebody to legal ramifications. It was a very simple misstep on my part and a very simple fix. Certainly nothing that would deserve this intense, violent, negative response within me. So I got to the office and I did a round or two of tapping and I formulated my response for this email and I sent it off. And I know I better do some worksheets around that. I better find a way to use the tools, whether I want to use Ho'oponopono or the Sedona Release Method or Byron Katie's work or Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheets, to uncover, to ask to be shown what some part of my mind is currently hiding from me about how my interpretation of this relatively benign email message pointing out an error on my part was interpreted by me in such a way that it resonated this almost rage response. So I'm through the weekend. The problem, the misstep was corrected, the email sent, and what most people, what I did for years, and what most people would do is move on as though nothing happened. Most people would not even admit their anger. Well, to be truthful, most people would respond from the hurt or wounded cover-up of the rage response, and it would cause a disruption in the relationship. What I know is that rage response, that woundedness within me that the rage response is covering up, hasn't gone anywhere. And still, at this very moment, still resides in me and is there to be triggered the very next time there's any kind of an upset that I choose to interpret in a similar fashion. And the beauty of this work is that I don't need to wait until it gets triggered again and then just do a quick EFT tapping round or help somebody, have somebody help me craft a neutral sounding response so I can pretend that I wasn't upset. I don't have to wait. I can be proactive, and I can do a worksheet process, and I can get access to the energies that are in me that are actually feeding the rage response that I felt on Sunday. Now, I can make some educated guesses. After 47 years of doing therapy in various forms, there's all kinds of stuff I can guess at. And I might get some intellectual satisfaction from guessing at them. I might even get really, really lucky and stumble across something that is right on the money about what's the emotional woundedness in me that got resonated. However, most of the time, my experience has demonstrated to me that when I do that without just stepping into the worksheet process, whatever it is my mind shows me that I then tend to think of as, oh, that's the answer, that's what this is about, is a distraction from the real issue. Why? Well, because some part of my mind has decided that this rage, this trauma, this upset is too difficult, too intense, too negative, too rage-inducing, too fear-producing, whatever, for me to look at. How do I know that? Because I wasn't walking around on Sunday thinking, oh boy, I'm feeling really inadequate. I'm feeling really hurt and wounded. I'm really emotionally vulnerable, and I can't tolerate it if somebody finds that I made a mistake and points it out to me. I wasn't in that state at all. I was having a lovely Sunday morning. I was having, you know, family in from out of town. I was engaged with people. I was not the least bit connected to a realization that I have unresolved woundedness in me that could benefit from a worksheet process. So that's how I know that there's some part of my mind that was and still is actively hiding from me whatever this energy or woundedness is that got resonated by the interpretation I placed on this email that I received. And again, if I'm willing to do the worksheets, if I'm willing to dismantle, unload, identify, and then dismantle the pain, fear, or sadness energy in me that's connected to this, that's resonating and connected to whatever the interpretation is that I put on this email, I can leave, as the way Guy Finley talks about it is, I will then leave that situation a different order of person than the one who went in it or the one who experienced it. If I don't do that work, I'm kidding myself in thinking that everything's okay. Because quite literally, an irrational level of upset was clearly present in me upon reading that email. And what we know in this work, what we observe over and over again, is there is nothing in the email that's ever going to create an emotional response within me. How do I know that? Well, because it's electronic signals that are being sent through the air that show up on a phone, you know, display, and those things are not causal factors for my emotional state. The only thing that is a causal factor for my emotional state is the interpretation that I create and place on the outside events, which are always neutral in my life, and what that may be resonating as stored energy within me. So if I'm holding a belief that my value is only evident and is completely contained in my ability to do everything perfectly, then anytime somebody points out an error that I've made, it resonates this belief in me that I have no value. Well, that might be part of what I discover when I do worksheets on this. That might be part of what I discover. It might also be that I discover that the interpretation I put on this email, relatively benign email, is connected to resentment I'm holding because maybe I'm filled with a whole set of conclusions that I do more in this relationship than my business partner does. And that, you know, this little misstep on my part is being interpreted so negatively by me that it's resonating this upset I have about how the relationship is lopsided. And if that's the case, it's pretty sure to be connected to that kind of a dynamic that I downloaded much earlier in life, like Diedrich Wolzak would talk about. If I'm able to use his process and ask, okay, what's the emotion that I'm experiencing? And then I ask myself, okay, what's one of the first times, Tim, that you ever felt this emotion? And it flashes back to an earlier time in my life. Chances are pretty good that there was going to be another time in my life where I felt like I was giving a lot more in a relationship than somebody else, and it wasn't fair, and I downloaded resentment. That's what I need to get access to. What are those hidden beliefs? And we know if they're negative, they're false, and we know they're hidden because, as I said, I wasn't walking around on Sunday consciously thinking, boy, I really don't have any value unless I'm doing everything perfectly. So there's some part of my mind that has had experiences in life and judged them a certain way and then downloaded the belief that says, I'm not okay knowing about this conclusion, this negative conclusion about myself, or the lopsided nature of relationships, or how my value is determined only by my being perfect or flawless in my execution of things. So if any of this sounds familiar, if you've ever been triggered to a negative emotional state from reading an email and the interpretation that you put on it, if you have any questions about what is this worksheet process or how might it be applied, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1. And we'll have a conversation. So the other thing that I do on a regular basis is announce on Tuesdays and Thursdays that we have a support group. And so there's a support group on tonight, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. It's available absolutely free. You can access it by getting all the login information for the Zoom call at mindshiftersacademy.org. And please remember there's a separate login page for Tuesday and a separate one for Thursday. I should also say, because I keep asking, and it's been fruitful lately, I've asked people to think of someone that they would like to have me interview, whether it's for the Mind Shifters Radio or it's for the Journey's Dream hosted On Your Mind podcast. And I interviewed somebody a couple weeks ago who ended up referring me to 4 separate people. And I'm on the verge of getting the 4th person scheduled for an interview. So we have Jim Gottstein, who's the author of the Zyprexa Papers, who's an attorney from Alaska. We have Robert Whitaker, who is the author of 2 powerhouse books. One of them is Anatomy of an Epidemic, and the other one is Mad in America. And We have two women who have each survived abusive episodes within the psychiatric system in their younger periods in their lives and are now quite high functioning. And if you know somebody like that, either somebody who's written a powerful book about self-help, personal growth, spiritual growth, psychiatry and psychology, if you know somebody who's written a book about how they've overcome, one of the wonderful interviews I did was with Corinne Zupko. And Corinne had multiple diagnoses of anxiety disorders from a very young age, separation anxiety, et cetera, social anxiety. And she finally reached a crisis in her college years and had a panic attack at 2 or 3 in the morning and called her mother. And her mother said, now that you're in this crisis, will you please let me introduce you to the Course in Miracles? And her mother had been trying to get her to listen to Course in Miracles or read it for years. And because of that crisis point, Corinne finally said yes. And so she dove into the Course in Miracles. And as she dove into Course in Miracles, she found a way to construct a system, not just reading the Course in Miracles, but she's quite the bright mind, and she found a way to compile a system that really worked for her, and she wrote the book From Anxiety to Love. And so I read the book, and it was very much in line with what we do in Mindshifters Radio and the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery and all the work we've done for the past 17 years in the Mindshifter support group that's running on Tuesday. And so thanks to that lead, we had a wonderful interview. And we have shared that on Mindshifters Radio, and we've also got one of those interviews that I did with her published on the On Your Mind podcast. That's available at journeysdream.org/podcast. And that's another powerful resource, and I would encourage people to take advantage of it. It's absolutely free. There are over 60 interviews now that we've done with people who are in the mental health field. They are either integrative psychiatrists who've had their own mental health travels or journeys, or they are people who work in the field as therapists or yoga instructors or doulas who work with postpartum issues with women, or authors who've written powerful books that talk about emotional issues in teenagers like Trowbridge Road, Marcella Pixley. So we've been blessed with people giving us wonderful introductions to a list of people for us to interview for the On Your Mind podcast and Mindshifters Radio. And if you've got a suggestion, please let us know. Either call right now at 563-999-3581 or send an email to tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And we will let the good times roll. We will do everything we can to connect with those people and invite them to be either on Mindshifters Radio or the On Your Mind podcast or both. And we'll enrich the community by exposure to even more varied and productive ideas. And that's our goal here. Our goal is to be of service, to strengthen and enrich this community in whatever way we can. And the most direct way we do that, some would say it's an indirect way, but I firmly believe the most direct way we do that is by using the tools ourselves, by stepping into the direct application of these tools on a regular basis. My life gets better. And since, as the Course in Miracles lessons are telling us, we're all connected. And that's why I backed up to yesterday's lesson. I bless the world because I bless myself. here's a direct statement of the most useful thing I can do to make the world a better place is to use the tools that Michael and Jeannie offer at whyagain.org to step into the use of the worksheet process and the targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter, and dismantle as soon as possible the rage that was in me that came up Sunday when I read an email and interpreted it as being this attack, or interpreted it in such a way that it resonated an old wound. And as the Course in Miracles lesson from yesterday tells me, I bless the world by blessing myself. I bless the world by recognizing that I'm creating every experience of life I have that is less than what the Creator gave me. What did the Creator give me? The Creator gave me the experience of life expressing in form, the creative energy of life expressing in form. And so everything that I do within my mind-body energy system that generates an experience that's less than that bliss, that gratitude, that joyful experience of life, everything I do to generate that is in error. Of course, I can't see that, and I can't do anything about it. I won't have access to the process or be able to affect it in any substantial way unless I recognize the truth of that. Because as long as I'm blaming anyone or anything outside of me for my experience in life or my emotions, I cannot step into the use of a tool which will help me see how I'm the author of, I'm the architect, the general contractor, and the laborer constructing my life experience moment to moment. So I bless myself, and I bless the world around me. The only good way for me to bless the world around me is to step into the use of these tools to dismantle every experience I have that is less than the flow of creative energy expressing in form, which, by the way, goes beyond words every heartbeat. We create words like bliss. We create words like compassion, joy, love. But the fact of the matter is the experience in the moment of being part of the flow of life goes beyond words. It is not good, not bad. It's just beyond words. It isn't, shall we say, necessarily productive. It is certainly not destructive. It is just an extension of the flow of that creative energy. And the way it gets experienced in me is determined by my thoughts, my beliefs, my interpretations, my willingness to see everything that I have been through, my willingness to own my life experience and my role as co-creator of it. And it is never caused by the people and things outside of me. And the more I step into that realization, the more I find ways to observe that directly, the more opportunities I'm going to find to step into the use of the tools. Like the opportunity that I saw on Sunday when I read this email and it instantly created a rage response within me. And because of my years of working with these tools and my understanding of how the mind-body energy system works, I instantly knew, oh, I'm creating this. Oh, I'm hiding something from myself. Guy Finley likes to say, I wasn't walking around thinking that there's an angry, irritable little person in me. And then I read this email and all of a sudden my experience is there's this angry, irritable little person in me. Well, my mind is going to tell me this person who sent me the email put that angry, irritable little person in me. But because we study this work, we study ourselves, We make observations. We read the ancient teachings. We understand that's not the way it works. Nobody came along and put an angry, irritable little person in me. That's been in me, and I have been hiding it from myself. That's the case. That's the truth. That's the life that we're given. We are, Michael Rice likes to say, one of the worst things that's ever been done to us is that we've had it hidden from us that we are creators of our life experience. Truth is, my reality is strictly internal. It's unique to me and is created out of my own thoughts. That's a line from an older worksheet process. One of the ones, I think it's a 12-step worksheet that we used for, I don't know whether it was 8 or 10 years in the Tuesday support group before Michael developed the 7-step worksheet and started developing that one. But the truth is, my reality, the pictures my mind shows me of my life, my reality is strictly internal. It's unique to me, and it's created out of my own thoughts, nothing else. The picture my mind shows me is not created by the outside world. In the video by Anil Seth, he talks about it. He says, hey, we can measure the energies that come into the brain to form the pictures we see. And only about 20% of that energy and brain activity is coming from the optic nerve when we see something. The rest of it is coming from our memories. It's coming from our judgments. It's coming from our past. That's really powerful if you stop and think about it. That's science demonstrating what Michael Rice had in the reality management worksheet that said, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. Well, we have brain scans. We have electrical devices that can track chemical flow and electrical flow, and they can tell us without any doubt that when my mind shows me a picture of something, only about 20% of the information my mind is using to create that picture is coming from my optic nerve, meaning only about 20% of it is coming from what's going on in the world around me in that moment. 70 to 80% of it is coming from my interpretation, my judgment, my past, my biases, prejudices, whatever you want to call them, my traumatic history, my negative beliefs about myself, my previous experiences with similar situations. Scientific proof, again, his name is Anil Seth, A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H. You can look him up on YouTube, watch his videos. He's a researcher that studies perception. But it's scientifically demonstrated that a tiny fraction of the data that goes into making up the pictures my mind shows me is coming from the outside world in that moment. The majority of it, the vast majority of it, is coming from my history, my beliefs, my traumas, my memories. So if I don't like what I'm experiencing, if I don't like what I'm seeing, I can change the seer, me. I can change the data points that I'm willing to access. I can question. I can cancel my need to be right and give up knowing that I'm right and ask to be shown. I can question everything anew, which is one of the keys to the power of the worksheet process. It's not just canceling my goal. It's canceling my need to be right. It's canceling my need to make up another picture out of whatever data points my brain is showing me to justify what I'm feeling, to rationalize it, to demonstrate that I'm right. So my willingness to ask to be shown is an invaluable key to the benefits I receive whenever I use a worksheet, whether it's Byron Katie's worksheet or Michael Rice's worksheet or Ho'oponopono or the Sedona Release Method. My willingness to be shown, my willingness to cancel my need to be right. And, of course, for the Western mind, that's going to take some practice, because if you've been trained for decades to think that it's critically important for you to be right to avoid punishment or ridicule or to avoid being ostracized from your friends or to be insulted, if you've been conditioned for decades to believe that it's really important for you, for your safety, for you to be right, then it's going to be very difficult for you to break that. It's going to take some practice. I remember one time I was in an office for about 5 years, maybe 6 or 7, but 5 years is a good number. And in that office, I shared it with a couple people. The wastebasket was always in the same place. And this was long enough ago that we had a lot more day-to-day interaction with paper than we do today. There weren't computers around. Lots of things were written on paper with pen and pencil. And errors would mean we would just crumple up what we were working on and toss it in the wastebasket. And after about 3 to 5 years, whatever the actual time was, the people who owned the office decided to rearrange the furniture, and one of the things they moved was the wastebasket. And I, to this day, I can't quite tell you. What I do remember is that I was amazed at how long I went throwing waste paper to where the wastebasket used to be. How long I was on autopilot for the location of the wastebasket. That habit was so strong in me, the muscle memory, the thought process, here I am, I'm sitting here, and now I have a piece of paper in my hand that needs to go in the wastebasket. And the reflex was to just launch it to where the wastebasket used to be. I know it kept happening. Not every time, but even a year later, I know there were times when I would get busy and distracted, and I would launch that waste paper into a basket that wasn't there anymore. Well, if you use that in your own life, if you start observing in your own life how strong your habits of thought and patterns of behavior are, it'll give you some indication of why and how it might take you a while to correct a pattern or to change a pattern of this craving to be right and holding on to justification, rationalization for your being right, even though what you're doing from your position of thinking you're right is causing you pain, emotional suffering, relationship disruption, etc. It's a pretty powerful force, this force of habit, this power of habit that we have as humans. And it's a wonderfully useful force. Imagine how difficult your life would be if you had to relearn how to walk every time you got up from a chair. Imagine how difficult it would be to remain functional in the world if you had to relearn how to drive your car every time you got in a car. Imagine how difficult it would be to stay functional in the world at whatever level you're functional now if every time you wanted to go from your house to a point outside your house, whether it's work or the store, you had to consult the map because you couldn't remember the route. So this automatic part of the mind, this habitual response, has its usefulness. But in the realm of the emotional, psychological, it is a trap. And the guidance system that we've been given to help us understand when it's gone off the tracks is our negative emotional states. If I have a negative thought about myself or somebody else, or a negative emotion come up, I can instantly know three things. Number one, this negative thought or negative emotion is a lie. It's based on a falsehood. Number two, it's an old tape playing. It's not about the present moment. If I'm awake and alert and alive in the present moment, I'm not going to have a negative emotion. I'm not going to have a negative thought from the past coming up. So, using these tools, I can start to dismantle some of the traumas, some of the false beliefs, some of the negative response patterns, and gradually dismantle the old habit of craving to be right. And once I do that, I can ask to be shown. Once I can ask to be shown, I can have access to countless resources outside my conscious logical mind. Insight, intuition, the higher mind, Holy Spirit, the God mind, whatever you want to call it, the Christ mind. But I can't have access to that if I'm holding tight to my habit of wanting to be right and justifying my current beliefs or my current thought structure that's generating my perception that's resulting in the upset. So, we have about 8 minutes left. Time for a quick comment or a question. 563-999-3581. You can call that number and press 1, or you can send us an email, jeanie@yagain.org. Or you can email me, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. So how can we support you with what little time we have left today? What's on your mind? Remembering that the most useful thing you can do for yourself is apply these tools, because as our lesson tells us today, from yesterday's lesson in the Course of Miracles, I bless the world because I bless myself. Every time you pick up a tool and dismantle some of the negativity in your mind, in your heart, and the false belief patterns from the past, you bless the world. You bless yourself. You bless the world. And if you don't do that right away and you end up suffering longer than you need to, I strongly recommend that you be gentle with yourself. This is a piece of advice I had found myself giving numerous times over the weekend, that I have several people I'm working with right now who are just in the middle of a whole flurry of life events that are coming fast and furiously into their lives and requiring them to make adjustments. Adjustments that take time, they take intelligence, they take money, they take energy, and there are only so many hours in the day. So they're trying to be, you know, good parents, good employees, good friends, good children to their parents. Not really children, but offspring to their parents, and they're becoming bogged down by their responses, by their interpretations. They're experiencing the emotional state of overwhelm. And I frequently like to remind those people, please be gentle with yourself. There's every good reason to understand that right now life is handing you lots and lots of things that are demanding your time and your energy. And no one's perfect. As a matter of fact, for one person I was talking to, she's got a young child, and one of the biggest, most consciously prominent goals in her life is to be a good parent, to be a wonderful parent, to be far better for her daughter than her parents were able to be for her. And, of course, it's not possible to be perfect. Everybody has times when they get triggered to upset or more things being demanded of them in the moment by life and parents or kids that they can possibly respond to. And so I found myself reminding this person that in my 47 years of doing therapy, some of the most difficult people to help were people who came in and said they never saw their parents argue. They never saw their parents disagree. And for decades now, I've told people, you know, this is an issue that if I have people who were raised in a house where there were yelling, screaming, knockdown, drag-out fights, it's very difficult to help them learn how to live in a peaceful, loving, respectful relationship. The only thing that rivals that for difficulty is trying to help people who were raised by parents who never argued and never disagreed. Why? Well, because they don't have any template for what to do when the stress is up. Michael Rice says, when the stress is up and the chips are down. So I was encouraging this woman to understand that it isn't even useful for her to find a way to live her life and never have an upset with her daughter. It's highly useful at the highest levels for her to reach into those moments where there's an upset has been triggered between her and her daughter and use it as a teaching moment. And so she has access to these tools. She has access to the EFT tapping and breathing. And it's a great reminder that it's not my job to be perfect, just like it's not my job to keep any upset from my children. It's my job as their parent to help them learn how to deal with upsets and disappointments in life. It's not my job to prevent them from experiencing any of them. So the same thing goes with, you know, triggered, angry, upset communications. It's not my job to make sure there's never any triggered or angry, upset communications between me and my children. It's my job to teach them how to use those to heal and move forward. And again, the tools for that are available at YGN.org. And we are here near the end of our time, so I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice. I will turn on her microphone since she hasn't done that yet.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks. So I hope your day yesterday was successful and
it was.
Enjoyed
had,
the.
Well, it was one of those where I had to race from one thing to another and didn't even have time to catch a breath, but it all worked out all right. And so I hope the interview with Pat Ogden was useful for people. And we'll do more of those if we have to skip another show. And I'll invite you to have a great show.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
All right.
You have a good afternoon.
Take care.
You too. So welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, July the 27th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581 and press 1. And that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get in, I'll just say that I had asked everybody to hold the space yesterday because I had to go to the physician today, and my blood work had come back with some questionable scales, and I love my physician. I'm just so open to – he's not listed as a naturopath, nor is his physician's assistant. However, they are so – in line with what we teach, and that the mental and emotional manifest physically. And it was so easy to explain to her that we had been, you know, working and processing and breathing and that I was looking at a lot of things from my past abuse and settling it, and that I felt like I had moved, because of doing the inner work, had moved from being hypothyroidism to hyperthyroidism, and that it was just that my thyroid finally realized it was safe to operate instead of holding on. And so she was agreeable for me to do a natural supplement that helps calm the thyroid, and to retest my blood in 3 months. And so I was just so glad that, you know, I guess a part of me had some fear that she would want to medically treat it, and then I would swing in the other direction, you know, like a pendulum. And I wanted to give it time for my so-called body to settle into the new norm and to adjust itself out to where it needed to be. And I feel like it will do that. And so, you know, I had to cancel, you know, what was underlying, you know, the fear. And so now, you know, it's everything is good to go, and they're on board with looking at just doing things natural and letting the process roll out. And so that's what we've talked about here before, is that your mental and emotional, your mind, your body, your spirit, everything is connected. And what impacts one impacts the others. And you have to look at the whole picture and look at cause and not just the effects. And, you know, that's what this work is about, is to undo the underlying cause that is in our unconscious or even our conscious, and to get back to being whole. So welcome, Michael. Well, I saw him come online, but maybe he doesn't
have his microphone on yet.
Oh, there he is.
I'm here. I am here.
All right.
And, you know, it's interesting that with what you're talking about, you know, very medically oriented and all, and if you go back 2,000 years ago, into the Aramaic language, where so much of the world, because of the Greek mistranslations, have categorized much of the ancient scripture as, well, you know, it's those old fogies and the dead who didn't know anything about anything. Man, you find the latest in physics and physiology and psychology and genetics right there in those Aramaic teachings. And the opening words in the book of John, where we're told by the Greeks, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In Aramaic, what it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And when fear enters the human system as a drug to anesthetize against feeling, then it puts a layer of energy over the thyroid gland that inhibits its function, thyroidism. And, you know, I really admire, honey, and acknowledge the level of work you've been doing the last several months. It was like that. Those two codependence intensives really kick-started and moved things, and the level of processing that you've done to deal with that fear have lifted that load, and my offering would be, yes, your thyroid is now in hyper because it's finding its balance, and it's going to have to do a little work to get back on track. But we hear those words from the book of John, and then we come forward 2,000 years and our bright scientists who think they've got it all together. If you listen to the latest coming out of the cell biologist laboratory, they say that when you think a thought, they've proven in the lab, when you think a thought, that thought becomes a molecule. Mind energy becomes flesh. It becomes a literal molecule in your structure. And that molecule circulates around in the structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. It lands on the cell. And the cell, now, what the people in the lab are saying is that the cell then replicates the neuropeptide. I don't believe that's true. I think they're just off a little bit there. What actually happens is when the neuropeptide lands on the cell, in the same way that when a TV signal lands on an antenna, it inserts itself in the antenna and becomes a picture on your TV screen, flows through those wires and literally is turned into a picture by your television set. Well, in precisely the same way, when that neuropeptide lands on the cell, on the antenna, and literally, you know, a cell becomes, they think that, you know, the nucleus of the cell is what's really important. They've shown you can go, you know, just like you'd open an orange and take the nucleus out, you can take everything outside of it, just have the shell left, that if you leave the receptor sites, the neuropeptides still have a place to land, and the cell still functions perfectly. Doesn't need a nucleus. Of course, the nucleus has its place and its work, but it's not the key to it. But if you go and take some enzymes and digest all the antenna, all the receptor sites on the cell becomes non-functional. The neuropeptide lands on the cell, and the cell, or the neuropeptide, pardon me, the energy pattern of the thought, if you were looking from the inside of the cell, when it lands, it, in a sense, inserts itself. And literally, if we were inside the cell watching that neuropeptide land on the antenna, what comes into the antenna we call chemistry, or what comes into the cell, pardon me, through the antenna, we call chemistry. Mind energy now becomes flesh. I mean, the understanding and the wisdom and the function of the mind in that ancient teaching is so profound. And the Greeks are like stunted little, you know, I mean, they talk about the Greeks and how great their philosophies were. The truth is, when it comes to how the world actually works, those philosophies are so stunted and so lost compared to the Aramaic as to be, you know, in a sense, a real joke. It's like it's got, if Yeshua sat in most so-called churches that try to replicate his teachings today in the Western world, he'd say that's all Greek to me, because that's what it is. It's Greek philosophy that's been put in his mouth. And you look at all the terrorism and the trauma that happens. I'm just hearing an announcement that today that the word that was used, quote unquote, terrorists on January 6th, you know, the policemen are testifying, and they're saying it's clear that these people perceive themselves to be Christians. And it's like, oh, what an oxymoron, Christian terrorists. How bizarre is that? How crazy is that? But if you've got Greek philosophy and your God's one that wants to, you know, I mean, look at the Greek gods. They rape their own mothers. They murder their own children. It's insane. Or you watch what's done in the name of God in from the Greek translations, and you've got crazy time. Go back to the Aramaic. You listen to this man, Yeshua. He brings a whole correction. Everything that went before him. You know, they talk about a new covenant. It isn't just a new covenant. It's a new understanding of what the Creator is about. You know, the ancients had this horrible father that's going to out to get them and murder them if they're not doing the right thing. In fact, not only murder them, no, we're not going to murder them. We're going to torture them for eternity. Yeshua says, first of all, he doesn't say it's my father. He says it's our father. And he says, here's what the Creator brings. It is our Father's good pleasure to give us the community of love. Those words were mistranslated by the Greeks as the kingdom of heaven. It's the Creator's good pleasure to give you that. And you look at how many people are running around in fear and terror and trauma. Over 15 times in that New Testament, we hear Yeshua saying, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not. And we hear these Greek preachers up there saying, the beginning of wisdom is fear of God. I beg your pardon. There is so much distortion and literal insanity there. People terrorized and traumatized by preachers up there screaming and raging about Satan and how Satan's going to... Excuse me? Let's look at the Aramaic Satan. In Aramaic, Satan means the resister one who misleads. You look at the average person today, and they're in trauma, and they tell you about how their trauma is somebody else's fault. And you say, well, actually, I noticed you've been through that trauma 87 different times with 42 different people. Did it ever occur to you that it might be yours and about you? What do people do? They go into resistance. Oh, no, this isn't about me. This is about, let me tell you the story about them and how they did it to me. And that's exactly the definition of Satan in the Aramaic, the resister, one who misleads. That's all it means. It's not some dude with a red suit, a tail, and a pitchfork. And, you know, the stories we tell ourselves, the stories we buy into determine the way we behave. How can you have someone who believe in a creator whose good pleasure it is to give them the kingdom, literally the community of love, how can they become terrorists? They can't. But the story they've bought into is a terrorizing God. Now you've got people who will make great terrorists. And they'll buy anything you want to sell them. They'll tell you about how, yes, you know, we need to have sexual integrity and we need to have honesty and we need to have and we need to have and we need to have. But when somebody comes along that does everything that's the opposite, if they offer them a little bonus, they'll buy it and support it. It's time for us to wake up to who we are as human beings. And the truth is, we are quite literally made in the image and likeness of that creator who offers us the community of love freely for nothing, just for being created, that that's offered to us. And when we accept it, we live in such a different world that it's almost unfathomable. And so the wake-up call is if you're living in pain and trauma in your life, notice that you've bought a story. And the story is a lie, because life is not designed to include pain and trauma. Pain and trauma are simply results from engaging in energetic patterns that produce pain and trauma. It is self-inflicted. In fact, let's look at the word sin, S-I-N, and I like to put that down to self-inflicted nonsense. And if you look at the word sin, the word sin in Aramaic is an archery term that simply means that someone is off the mark. They're out of alignment with their highest and best. And the result of being out of alignment with your highest and best is that you're going to experience pain. You're going to experience trauma. Of course, everybody's got the Satan game going really well. And so what do they say? Ah, I know whose fault it is. It isn't mine. I have nothing to do with this. Why would God let such a thing happen? Excuse me? The Creator doesn't let anything happen. The Creator creates, offers free will, and you get to do whatever you like with it. If you're living in pain and trauma, maybe it's time to shift to a different story. Maybe your parent, the Creator, has for you all kinds of awesome things in store and is not demanding obedience. It is not demanding compliance. It simply says, well, you know, whatever story you want to engage in, you get to experience the effects of. If you want to engage in a story about drama and trauma and pain, and you want to do hate and fear and rage and guilt, then you'll get to experience the result of the mind energy, the story you engage in. And if you want to change your mind, you could log into a different story and create a different kind of function. And that's going to require the topic of our next chapter, Be Engaged. And our next chapter in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? We're going to read a few paragraphs from, is chapter 16, Healing Abuse. and victimhood. If you're following along with us in the book, we're on page 93. And I've been speaking to this character, Richard, who's this recalcitrant kind of guy who showed up at Heartland one day. You know, he isn't a real person. He's a composite of real people that I've worked with, weaved a story, including many more issues than he as one individual had. And so he's been through a lot of abuse and victimhood. He shared with us already in the book in his childhood, and he's done a lot of abuse and created lots of victims in his life. And he's kind of at the point where he's ready to start to change his mind. So we start out chapter 16 with, "It's clear to me now," Richard says, "how I've set myself up. Strange as it sounds, I was comfortable in the role of a victim. I've practiced it all my life. I didn't realize I caused the trauma that was my constant companion. It seemed to benefit me to show how wounded I was, how much of a victim I was, because people didn't hold me accountable. It seemed to save me from further punishment and put me in control. I can now see, however, the first step in the process of becoming victim was my choice to be victimized." And the key thought that arrives here is there are no victims, only volunteers. We volunteer with the realities we hold. Richard goes on and says, "As I look at it, I can see I purposely played the victim role to keep people from victimizing me. What manipulation, what a twisted way I've used people," he mumbled to himself. "As I think about it, I fed on the energy of fear. It was that and anger. They seem to be my only two choices. Wow, I really have some work to do if I'm going to change the foundation of my relationships from fear and anger to love." So Richard's starting to see his way out of a lifetime. You know, when he showed up, he's on his third marriage or on his third divorce, and knows that the problem is all the women in his life, and all he has to do is get out of Dodge. That's what he was doing. He was leaving his hometown in order to escape, taking a geographic cure, and heading out west. Heartland happened to be on the way, and a friend of his says, "Hey, why don't you drop by and have a conversation with Michael Rice? Maybe he can support you." And so this book is our fabricated conversation about some very real principles that tie into the first century Aramaic process of healing. And that's what we are here to support happening in our world, is the healing process. So we're honored and delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. And Miss Jeannie, we've still got about 21 or 22 minutes left. So do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up? Or anything happening?
You actually have 40 minutes left.
40 minutes, right, yes.
Yeah. No, it's all quiet on the home front. And so if you all that are listening have a question, if you're on another station, you have to dial in at 563-999-3581 and then press 1. And we've got a hand up, and I believe it's Miss Magda, 828. You're on the air.
Hey, young lady.
Hi. Thank you.
Welcome, and thank you for all the work you guys did to get us in and out of there and the food you gave us and all of it. Much appreciation.
Wow. Well, you're so very, very welcome. And I just have to comment about how much you've done to get everything unpacked and cleaned and put in its place in such a short amount of time. You're really a good role model for me, Jeannie, and maybe Michael. I know Jeannie was involved because it's her little shoot, right?
Jeannie's done a lot more than
I do. It was my little shoes and tea sets. Yeah, Michael's not collecting those yet. but I've got one cabinet about halfway, so I still have to go on it. But the other two cabinets are complete, and It's just awesome. And when Aria came yesterday morning, we had the lights on it, and she was like, oh, wow, I love it.
Well, thank you for sending the pictures, because it is, they're gorgeous. They're just really beautiful. So I'm glad you got everything home and that you guys are back and settling in.
Yeah.
And
well, she's wondering how she had it all in the cabinets. That was the question this morning. It's like, how did I get this all in three cabinets?
I know. We were remarking about that when we were taking the pieces out, like, wow, and there's more back here, you know.
And there's stories behind almost every one of them. As I was unpacking them and washing them off, I was like, oh, you know, this one happened here, and this is, you know, so there's stories there. Yeah, so thank you.
You're welcome. And I appreciate the pictures very much. So I'm calling in desperation for some help. Got any help available?
Absolutely, a ton of it.
Okay, good. I need it. I am a very stuck place. I have to get a notebook here. I didn't intend to call, but my better angels made me press number one.
We're glad you did.
Good, me too. So, remember way, way back when Chuck and I did the responsibility communication, way, way back, a couple months ago, and my stuckness really started there. I didn't realize until later, after I had completed that and gave the feedback and, you know, on the second class. And then I realized, golly, I'm not doing any worksheets now. I'm not doing any mind shifters. I'm not doing anything. And I'll say that I really, and I think you know this, but I will say it again, I very much appreciate the tools. The worksheets are a miracle. They help us all produce miracles within ourselves. And so many of the tools that you have are absolutely fantastic. And by the way, Chuck and I are doing the commitment with each other every morning. So that's a tool that's getting used. However, the fact that I'm not doing any worksheets is like, oh. So I called and talked with Dr. Tim, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and we got to the bottom of why that might be happening. And it appears that it is because I believe that I'm going to use the word incompetent, that I'm not able to really do my work the way it should be done. And that comes from the realization that I thought I knew how to do the responsibility communication tool the right way after all of these years of trying to learn about it. And then, of course, there was so much that I needed to do differently. And your feedback was great. It was a fantastic class. And I think, though, at the bottom of it, somehow I took away the message that somehow I'm not able to handle. I'm not able to do it. I'm incompetent. Anyway, I'm stuck to the point where I'm realizing that I don't have any, I want to do worksheets, and I don't have any gusto to actually do it. And I don't know what I need to do or to have to get me to push the button to actually sit down and do the work. Because there's a lot to work on, of course. So
well,
that's my thing.
My take is that if you go back and listen to your feedback, when we did the second class.
Mm-hmm.
When you stepped into the responsibility communication, you opened very wide and deep a space for you to look into everything that you have spent, as most of us do, your whole life, trying to keep hidden from yourself. You opened it in a whole new way. And one of the things I observe and have observed over the decades working with people is when they hear, wow, I can work through all this, that is so exciting, and they want to do it, until you look in there and you go, holy crap, I have to work through that? And it becomes too much. There's a point where it's just like overwhelm, you know, kind of like the story of the flood. And so my offering would be what I would see, and I've watched this happen over and over and over again. People get excited about the tools. They start to use the tools until they start to look at the next level of their own minds. And then there's a time period where it's just blotto. It's just too much. It's like, how can I do this? And then what I've observed is that people who stick with it, keep building the brain cells, and come to the point where they realize they can work through it, and they start to chip away at it one piece at a time, realizing that you don't have to do it all at once. So my take is, when I think about you, as you reviewed the actual video of the responsibility communication, and I invite you to maybe go back and do that again, the insight you got was just such into your own unconscious dynamics was so deep and so profound that it's a shock to the system. Wait a minute, how is this possible if this is true about me?
And
that drives one deeply into the resistor. And so that'd be my offering. And, you know, just gently be gentle with yourself. Take care of yourself. You know, maybe when you're in that state where it's too much, that's where you go just take a bath, light a candle, and breathe in the bathtub and just, you know, take care of yourself and be gentle with yourself. And realize that, you know, you don't have to do it all at once. And that there's another thing that happens is that people get a look into that part of their minds, and they think, oh, my God, how terrible I am, or how unfathomable, how unresolvable is this? And then when you realize that you're in the same boat as everybody. You know, I we've talked about how much work Jeannie's done in the last year, 2 years, since we've been here. There's just been huge, huge amounts of work done. And I really, Jeannie, admire you for what you've done and the courage you've had to jump in and go for it. And you've done such a huge amount of work in such a short period of time. I look back and I look at my own process over a period of 50 years of, you know, little bit by little bit, getting these things to open, doing the work, running through, you know, one example that comes to mind, you've heard this before, was the first summer we were at Heartland and we went on a canoe trip. And, you know, my spine, my brother's in the printing business, and he had printed a book for me at one time that had a particular picture of me when I was about 26. And it's a side view picture, and if you look at my spine, if you look at an old man or an old woman at the top of their spine, you see the dowager's hump on them, their head pushed forward. That's what my spine was like. Now, if you look at my spine today, it's pretty straight, and it's pretty naturally straight. And it took me decades to process that and go through that. And that one, the first summer, we had this canoe trip, and I had so much pain, and this went on for the pain in my spine, probably 3 years. But this that particular time, we were we went on a canoe trip, and I had to sit in the middle of, could not even, I had so much pain in my spine, I could not even hold a paddle to canoe in the canoe. Now, I look at that, and I realize it took me years to discover, understand, and move through those things and develop the tools with which to deal with them for myself and support others in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watch how much and how quickly Jeannie has moved through in such a short period of time. And, you know, I mean, sometimes we'll be in processing something, and it will be physical, mental, emotional work, the whole gamut. And I'll say to Jeannie, you know, it's like, how could we ever explain this to anyone, what we're doing here? How could we ever transfer the level of work that we're doing and really have people understand it? And the only way we could do it, of course, is over a period of time. But the intensity of it and the sometimes the physiological contortions that happen when you're moving through things are pretty intense. And so be gentle with yourself, be willing, and pick up the tools as you're ready. And, you know, and so you've taken a sabbatical. But, you just looked in a pretty deep pit.
Yeah.
And I understand stepping back from going, holy crap, can I actually do this? Yes, you can.
Thank you.
But you did an extra wide opening and a really profound piece of work.
Yeah,
that's my offer.
And you did a phenomenal job of it too, Magda. I mean, you're saying, I don't know how to use this tool. You were fabulous.
Well, thank you. Thank you both.
You brought the tool to a whole new level of understanding for me. That's why the new worksheet information's out there after 25 years of teaching that and almost not changing it at all.
Great. So if I can crawl out of my hole of the martyr, who really doesn't know how to do it, I would be able to sit up at the top and realize that what you're saying is true. Because I've heard you say it before, and there's part of me, of course, that is discounting it. You know. He doesn't really know.
And how many times?
Like Michael Wright doesn't really know. Go ahead.
How many times did your power person tell you how incompetent you were?
Yeah, daily. In one way or another.
So notice that you're giving yourself that message, and that I would offer is your primary message to forgive at this point.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, start to see yourself from a place outside of that perception. You know, the person who looks in the mirror and they see they're fat and they say to somebody, you're fat. And everybody looks and goes, what are you talking about? You don't have an ounce of fat on you. What are you talking about? That's crazy. And they look in the mirror and they, because their perception is based in I'm fat, they see that and they don't see themselves realistically. A good tool to use in that place is, well, gee, I've had five different people that tell me that that's a foolish thought. So maybe I should entertain that that's a foolish thought, and maybe my mind is lying to me, and maybe I'm not fat. And so my offering is, I see you as competent and capable, and my testimony to you in this responsibility communication tool is, after 25 years of me teaching it, you taking on using the tool and the questions you roused in doing it because of the skill you develop at using it, totally opened and totally changed it for me. So I'm going to invite you to take a third-person view and maybe trust what I'm telling you rather than trusting you what your own mind is telling you that your power person told you. And go, oh, I actually transformed this tool with the work I did. Maybe this perceptual construct about myself being incompetent was just my father's lie, or my mother's lie, or my big sister's lie, or my own lie to myself. And start to see yourself through that other set of eyes.
Thank you.
The eyes of acknowledgement.
Okay. Thank you. I think you hit all of the points that are really pertinent and what I wrote down that I shall be reminding myself is be gentle with myself and that I will begin to use the tools again. I really will, but when I'm ready. And remember that I don't
and throw away the lies.
Yeah. Throw away the lies. Huh.
Absolutely. Be about forgiving the lies.
Oh, okay.
That's the breath we needed right there.
Yeah. So incompetence means if I'm believing that I'm incompetent in that area, then the goal I would be dealing with is to be competent, and that's the goal I need to cancel. Would that be right?
Well, actually, here, just a slight refinement. Just a slight refinement. I had my mute button on and the screen went off. A slight refinement would be, no, I don't think the goal is for you to be competent. I think the goal that you want to start working on now is the goal to believe that you're competent. See, you're going to go into your file on belief about self. If you just do the goal to be competent, then you're going into your file about being competent. And that's the one you'll clean out. But when you go in and start cleaning up the beliefs you have about yourself, you're in a totally different part of the mind, healing a totally different issue that doesn't have anything to do with being competent.
Yeah.
That's why refining the goal is always a key part of the process, because it's the goal that takes you to the files, so to speak, that need to be cleaned up.
Okay, so my goal on the first worksheet will be that I want to believe that I am competent, and that is the goal that I will then cancel, and my brain's going, why would I cancel? That's the wrong question.
Can I ask a question?
Hold on for 2 seconds, sweetie. Notice that as long as you hold content, messages from your power person that you're not competent, then when you load the goal to be competent or believe that you're competent, then your mind is going to generate a perceptual construct of self as incompetent, because that's within that file in your mind. When you cancel the goal, that's when you get to collapse that pained perception in on itself and get to the root energy of it, that when you bring it forward in the presence of love, it begins to dissolve and disappear. Then my offering is the next goal that you'd want to work on would be the goal to be seen as competent, i.e., has it ever happened that you're interacting with Chuck and the message you get from Chuck you perceive as him seeing you or calling you incompetent or anyone else for that matter? So they'd be two separate goals that would lead you to cleaning up these unconscious dynamics. And then you might get back to the goal of, you know, the desire to have mom, dad, sister, brother, whoever it was, to see you as competent. Or maybe, you know, a former spouse. So there'd be all those aspects. And as you collapse into each of those, and there's probably going to be some pretty deep pain, because you remember one of the dynamics that instills a power person issue into the mind is it's perceived as survival. And so when the message came that you weren't competent, that was your psychological survival. And that's what would drive that in deeper, the desire to survive psychologically as a competent being. So all of that would be tied up in this issue, would be my offering. And
wow.
You chip away a piece at a time. This is going to be probably one of your 77 times 70 issue worksheets.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you.
So, Jeannie, you had a thought?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this maybe just for me that it was different, and it might not be different for you, but when you said your goal, I want to believe I'm confident, change
mm-hmm.
it to just the goal that I believe I'm confident and take out that I want to. I don't know, that's very gray area, but for me it was like, it's almost like saying try.
Yeah.
To say I want to believe versus just saying I believe, I'm confident.
Okay, that's interesting because I always frame my goal in the I want to.
Okay.
So I don't. That's something to think about. Yeah.
And add
you.
In the line that of the worksheet, and I think of you every time I use the worksheet, is so I can.
Well, I can.
Because it's actually a goal under the goal.
Yeah, and usually a lot of them, actually. Mm. Yeah, I have that printed on my little short cheat sheet. I always have that in. And I think of you when I use it, too. Thank you. This has been very, very helpful. Thank you so much. And I'm breathing differently.
Well, there you go. We get to be truly helpful, and that's what we're here for.
Bless you. All right.
Well, bless you.
Yeah, well, you are. And so I just realized that I've been stuck like this for a long time, but I haven't called for help because I haven't been desperate enough. There's nothing going on in my life that is just so horrible that I need some help. It's just, I've just backed off. So
and
there's
course,
something new to me about...
You have to be competent.
Say it again.
Of course, you have to be competent.
So if I ask for help, it's over and not competent.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your meaning?
So that might just be another one of those Hydra pieces. You're good at those Hydra worksheets, remember?
Yeah, I am. Okay. That's great. That opens a whole new area. Okay. Well, thank you. This is very exciting. So I will ring off and listen to the next person and bless you both. Thank you both.
It is exciting, and thank you again for having the brain cells to ask the question that opened this refinement for people, because this is going to serve everybody, not just you. Seeing the importance of the goal and the shades of how the mind operates to keep us tricked into the old power person messages and believing that they're the truth when they're all lies.
Absolutely. The tricks that the mind plays.
Unlimited.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, well, I shall listen and bless you for all the work you're doing and have a wonderful day, you guys.
Sweet. You too. Blessings. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye. All right. Good conversation. Nice work, Magda. Thank you. The questions are so important in whatever stage somebody's at in doing their work. The willingness to push one and ask the question opens refinements that, otherwise... without the interaction with you, we'd never think of. It would never open. So that's one of the reasons we appreciate it when you push one and ask your question, even if your question seems like, oh, this is a silly one or such a basic one, whatever. Moving through it. Thank you again, Magda. Tell Chuck the food was delicious. When we were out at Heartland, Magda and Chuck and Julie helped us pack stuff up and helped us load the trailer, and we'd have been there for another 4 days. We were thinking, oh, we can have all this done and be gone in a day. Well, after spending a very full day with three of them helping us, we still had the next day a 22-hour day before we got home. By the time we got back, went back to Heartland and picked up the things we need to bring along. So much appreciation for the assistance. And we've got about 15 minutes left, so there's lots of time for another good conversation or two. Again, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Call that number. You'll be listening to the show. And if you push 1, we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Ms. Jeannie?
Yeah, we don't have a hand up or anything, but I just one of the things that I was just thinking about is that in the work and doing, you know, maybe you do it for years before you finally get it right, or there's no getting it right, but before you actually understand what you're doing. You know, sometimes I've worked with people and it's just like, you know, we'll use the tools even if you don't understand all of it, and eventually it comes, you know, and repeatedly I've heard people, you know, it's like, you know, I've done 200 worksheets and now I get it, you know, or whatever. But it reminds me of with Aria, and I think you said it's kind of like the Montessori school, that there is sensitive periods where you can absorb it so easily, and then other times, you know, it's like you hit a block and don't get it. And when you're in those sensitive periods, then just, you know, absorb and grab it and go for it. And maybe you have to change tools every now and then and do one, and then later maybe another one makes more sense. Kind of like our friend who she wouldn't ever do the forgiveness worksheets, and then all of a sudden she started doing it and it was like she loved it. So even as adults, I think we can have sensitive periods where we just absorb and understand, where other times it's like bounces off. If
right
you're
on
talking,
track.
I can't
you
hear
got
you.
Sweetie. Yep. No, you're right on. I'm in full agreement with you. Those sensitive periods when we're ready to do a piece of work. I mean, that's when it's there to be done, for sure.
And I think that's why it's
so
made it easier for you and I to continue, you know, the depth that we've been going to. And, you know, we hadn't done that in the years that I've known you. I mean, we've done our work, but it's like at a different level. And I think it's opening, and we're willing and just absorbing everything that Spirit's given us. So it's different.
Well, yeah. And I think, sweetie, that maybe a piece of it is that instead of doing Heartland for the summer, getting in the car and spending the next 8 months going to 30 different cities, moving in and out of people's homes, doing workshops, and then moving to the next city and the next city and the next city and the next city. The fact that we actually put our heads down in the same pillow every night after night, and been doing that for 2 years, has definitely created a different space for us to move forward. And
I agree.
It warms my heart to just think about you. So you are deeply appreciated. Deeply, deeply,
thank
deeply.
You. Me too. So we have 10 minutes. We can do another conversation. Press 1.
Yes, if you're out there in listener land, let's talk. How can we support you? And if there are no callers, I have enough on my plate that I'm willing to call it a day and just say that, you know, tomorrow we'll be back again at 1 o'clock and look forward to whatever conversations we can have to support the healing, literally, of every mind, heart, and being on the planet. We appreciate you being here. create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.